Heard from the Gospel of Matthew this morning. 25th chapter, beginning of verse 14. This is one of four parables that are all in a row. This is the third one. It's talking about the kingdom of heaven and the return of God. It says, "It will be like a man going on a journey who called his servants and entrusted to them his property. To one he gave 5 talents, to another 2, to another 1. To each according to his ability. Then he went away. He would receive the 5 talents, went at once and traded with them, and he made 5 talents more. So also he who had the 2 talents made 2 talents more. But he who had received the 1 talent went and dug it in the ground and hid the master's money. Now after a long time, the master of those servants came and settled accounts with them, and he who had received the 5 talents came forward bringing 5 more, saying, 'Master, you delivered to me 5 talents. Here, I've made 5 more. And his master said to him, "Well done, good and faithful servant. You've been faithful over a little. I will set you over much. Enter into the joy of your master.' And he also, who had 2 talents, came forward saying, 'Master, you delivered to me 2 talents. Here, I made 2 more. And his master said to him, "Well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful over a little. I will set you over much. Enter into the joy of your master.' And he also, who had received the 1 talent, came forward saying, 'Master, I knew you to be a hard man, reaping where you did not sow, and gathering where you scattered no seed. So I was afraid, and I went and hid your talent in the ground. Here, you have what's yours.' But his master answered him, 'You wicked and slothful servant. You knew that I reap where I have not sown and gather where I've scattered no seed. Then you ought to have invested my money with the bankers, and at my coming I should have received what was my own with interest. So take the talent from him and give it to him who has the 10 talents. For to everyone who has, will more be given, and he will have an abundance. But from the one who has not, even what he has will be taken from him. And cast the worthless servant into the outer darkness. In that place there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth." This is the word of the Lord. You can be seated. One of my favorite scriptures recently is Proverbs 4:23. It begins, it says this, "Keep your heart with all vigilance, for from it flows the springs of life." I don't necessarily like that translation. I like the little kids translation of it that I find in like the kids Bible, because it goes this way: above all else, guard your heart, for everything you do flows from it. Right? Everything you do flows right out of here, right? What you value, who you are, the kinds of things that you think on. And if we're going to talk about stewardship, it's important that we talk about the heart. Right, especially we're in the section on belief, right? Things that we should believe. And our beliefs come right out of inside, right? Out of the heart. Jesus said it this way in one of his teachings on the Sermon on the Mount. He said, "Every healthy tree bears good fruit," right? The tree that has good stock bears good fruit, and every diseased tree bears bad fruit. So that question's been asked, but I want you to take a few moments as I ask you each of these questions and think about your answer. In your heart, right, deep inside, if nobody else heard your answer and it was just you giving an answer, in your heart, who do you truly believe your life belongs to? In your heart, who do you truly believe that your time belongs to? In your heart, who do you believe that your money belongs to? How about your children? Your body? All the stuff that you've amassed? In your heart, who does all of that belong to? When you really sit down in the quiet of yourself without anybody else sitting around you, nobody has to hear that answer, right? If you were to answer that question, who does all of that belong to? See, the answer of the world is mine. The answer that the world gives over and over is, it's my body, I can do with it what I want. It's my money, I'll buy what I want. It's my time, I'll use it how I want. It's mine, right? We see that from the time that we're little bitty kids. And anybody that's had little kids knows that the three-year-old takes something from the two-year-old and the first thing out of the kid's mouth is mine, right? This is mine. It's not God's, it's not yours, it's we cry out all the time for all the education, all the teaching, all the instruction that we give. We seem to have missed the most elementary thing that's taught in kindergarten. It's taught in the very first page, the first chapter of Genesis. God is creator. That means he's owner, and we are stewards. It all belongs to him. We're just here to manage. We seem to forget that so often. But we're not unique, right? All of humanity throughout history has struggled with that, right? God told the people in Isaiah's day, through the prophet Isaiah, he says, the ox knows its master, the donkey knows its master's crib, but Israel doesn't know. And then it's left. Doesn't know what? Doesn't know their owner. They don't know who they belong to. They don't know who owns everything. The psalmist, as we said, as we read a number of times this morning already, the earth is the Lord's. And everything in it, the world and all who live in it, it all belongs to God. Every bit of it is God's. So this morning, we're going to explore a parable about the heart of some people who understand the master's heart, and the heart of one particular guy who doesn't understand the master's heart. And it affects the way they go about living life, and it affects the results that they get and the things that the master gives them. Totally changes everything based on the heart. The context of our passage is a very unique one in Matthew. Chapters 24 and 25 are a literary unit. They belong together, right? It's a chunk out of Matthew that suddenly begins talking about the end of time and the fact that Jesus is coming back. You have to read these two chapters all together to be able to get what's going on. These two chapters, 24 and 25, are meant to teach three main lessons. The first is that Jesus is coming back, right? He is coming back. The disciples were enamored in chapter 24 at the beginning of the book. They're standing in the temple and they're like, look at how awesome this temple is. This is really cool. And Jesus is like, yeah, it's all going to be destroyed. And they're like, whoa, what? When? And then Jesus launches into two chapters on, here, I'll teach you. Right? The signs of the end of the age. The way it's going to be at the end of time. The second lesson that these two chapters are trying to teach us is that when Jesus is coming back, nobody knows. We don't know when he's coming back. And so, God's people are supposed to be ready. They're supposed to be prepared. Therefore, stay awake, Jesus says in chapter 24, verse 42. Stay awake, for you don't know when or on what day the Lord's coming. So they teach us Jesus is coming back. They teach us that we don't know when he's coming back, and so we're supposed to be ready. And then the third lesson is that in that intervening time, when we're waiting for him to come back, we're supposed to be involved in service for the kingdom. We're supposed to be prepared. We're supposed to be diligent. And that lesson is taught four times in these two chapters in four different parables, four different stories. Ours is the third of the four. Okay, so let me rehearse the other three for you real quickly. The first is the master who goes on a journey. He leaves a servant in charge, and he says, hey, watch over things. And as he's gone, the servant decides that he's the master instead of the servant. And so he begins to beat his fellow servants, and he begins to use them to serve himself. But he's using the power and the authority and the things that are put under his control to serve himself. And Jesus says, that's not going to go so well for that guy when I come back. The second story is the parable of the 10 virgins. Five of them have all the stuff that they need, and they're ready, and they're eagerly waiting and watching, and when the master comes back, they are prepared. And five of them were foolish. They miss, right? They hadn't been about making sure they were ready for the servant, the master, to return. And then you have our parable. And then the last parable is the one of the separation of the sheep and the goats. It's a story about a group of people who care for the hungry, who welcome the strangers, who clothe the naked, who visit the sick and those in prison, making use of all the resources they have to do this for God's people. And at the end of time, when they meet Jesus, he says, "You did all this stuff." And they say, when did we do this stuff? And he was like, "Every time you cared for somebody else, when you watched over other people, when you used all that was entrusted to you to make sure that those who didn't have were cared for." Right? So this is the context that we have as we come to our parable, right? The end of time, the master's coming back, how are we using our stuff? And we meet our parable. Starts this way. "It will be like a man going on a journey who called his servants and entrusted to them his property." See, everything of importance in this parable is right there. That first chapter, that first verse, everything we need to know about the parable is right there. It's like a man going on a journey. And he calls and he says, "This is all my stuff and I'm giving it to you. Use it the way I'd use it. Steward it the way I'd steward it." Literally, the "it" refers back to the return of Christ, right? The kingdom of God, right? When is the end of time going to come? It's like this. When Jesus goes on a journey and he gives all of his stuff into our care, and then when he comes back, this is what the end of time will be. There's an owner. This guy going on a journey. He's really wealthy. He has multiple slaves. He has multiple servants. The amount of resources that he entrusts to each of these folks is staggering. Staggering. We use this word talent in our parable, and that doesn't really mean a lot to us. But if I was to offer you 75 pounds of gold, I'd be offering you a talent. If I was to offer you 75 pounds of silver, I'd be offering you a talent, right? A talent is 75 pounds. And money in that day was either gold or silver. So this master is, no matter how you slice it, he's offering huge chunks of money to each of these servants. If it's a gold talent, right, that's about $1.5 million, today's value. Five times that one guy gets. If it's silver, it's still nothing to shake your head at, right? It's still like $17,000. It's a good chunk of money to just hand over to somebody and say, "Here, take care of my money for me while I'm gone. Take care of my resources. Take care of my wealth." A lot of capital is exchanging hands between the master and those who work for him. But this owner isn't just an owner. You should come to verse 19. See, the parable starts and it says, it's like a man. It doesn't really give us much take. By the time you get to verse 19, it says, "Now after a long time, the master comes home," right? The Lord comes home. And remembering, this is all a series of parables about the return of Christ, right? After a long time, Jesus comes home. The Lord returns. And what's going to happen? It's easy for us to think, "Oh, this is just a parable. It's a nice story." It's a parable with a point. It's a story with a point meant to tell us that Jesus has gone away on a journey and Jesus is coming back. And when he comes back, all that he's entrusted to you and all that he's entrusted to me, he's going to ask for an accounting. And how that accounting is going to be given is all going to be based on our heart. How do we view him? How do we view what we were called to do? We know that there's at least three servants, probably more, but there's at least three servants because it's really hard to tell a story with 10 servants. And so there's three because that kind of illustrates a point easily in ancient storytelling culture. And it's important to remember, what does a servant exist to do? servant exists not to extend his own kingdom, not to exist his own fame, but a servant exists to extend the master's kingdom, right? A servant exists to make sure that the things that the master wants done are done, that the influence of the master is extended, that the things that the master values are cared for and done well. The master's estate, the master's interests, the master's desires, that they're promoted, that they're fulfilled in his absence. The servants exist to abandon their own ideas of what is wise and prudent and pursue the ideas of the Lord, their Lord, whatever it happens to be, whoever it happens to be. And in order to do that, they're given a lot of talent, a lot of stuff. And I began by asking you a whole number of questions, right? What would you do with your family? Who does it belong to? Who does your stuff belong to? Who does your time belong to? All of those things fall under the realm of talent, things that the Lord has entrusted to us. All of that stuff's in purview. This story is just about money, but it's about so much more than money. It's about all the things that God has put within your realm of control. How are you using them? What are you doing with them? Are you using it to extend God's kingdom and his fame and his desires, or are you using it for yourself? And I said it all has to do with heart. So let's look at the heart of the different people in this, right? Let's start with the heart of the owner. The heart of the owner, or the master, or the Lord, right, is really fascinating in this, right? He's a trusting master. He has a heart of trust. But he's willing to hand over things that he's worked hard for to other people, to give it to them, right? There's trust in that. There's faith. There's this, I believe in you, right, kind of thing there. He's wise. Because you notice it says that in verse 15, to one he gave five, to another two, to another one, to each according to his ability. He's a wise master. He knows and he wants people to succeed, so he doesn't give them more than they can handle. He puts under their control the things that he thinks they can manage well. He doesn't want his people to fail. He's looking for success. He doesn't want you to fail. He's looking for success. He's good. He's a thankful. He's filled with gratitude, right? At the end, as his servants come and report what they've done, right? He expresses gratitude back to his servants. Well done. I'm so pleased with what you've accomplished. Right? There's goodness and thankfulness in him. He's generous. He's a generous master. As his servants grow in their ability to handle more, he gives them greater things, right? As the story comes to the end, he says, you've been faithful with a little, now you get to get over a lot. Now, for most of us, we're like, man, I'll take $5 million. Like, that's a little? In the eyes of God, it is. Because God has a proper valuing of things. He understands what matters and what doesn't. And he tests us with the things that don't matter. See, we value money and we value stuff, but God doesn't value that. He doesn't care about that. That stuff will all pass away. And he uses that as the training ground to say, are you able to use it well so that I can give you things that really matter? The souls of people, the hearts of people. Because if you can't handle a greenback, then you can't shape a heart. You've got to learn the things that matter much and the things that matter little. The heart of this master is one that he desires to see his kingdom grow. He desires to see the kingdom grow. The whole point of entrusting his property to people is that he wants them to do something with it, right? When he comes back, he doesn't expect to get back exactly what he had. He wants to get back more than he had. It's the heart of any good businessman, right? You don't go into business thinking, I'm going to use everything I've got so that I can have exactly what I've got. Well, you can just sit there and do nothing and have that. The heart of the master is he wants his kingdom to grow. He wants to see it expand and flourish. Isn't that a wonderful picture of Jesus? If you think about that, right, here's a picture of a trusting, wise, good, thankful, generous, discerning, desires his kingdom to grow, properly understands the things that matter and the things that don't. It's a beautiful picture of Jesus. Now we have the hearts of the first two guys, first two servants. The first part of their heart is that they're eager. They are eager to extend the master's footprint. Did you pick that up in the parable? And as soon as it says, he who had received the 5 talents went at once. He didn't wait. He didn't lollygag around, right? He went at once and traded with them, and he made 5 more talents. And the same with the guy who had 2, right? These folks, these servants are eager to do the things that the master's about doing. They want to see the master's kingdom extended. They're diligent. And that's the second thing in their heart. They're diligent. You see, money doesn't grow on trees. It takes diligent work, and it takes management, and it takes investing, and it takes a market, creating a market. It takes a certain amount of risk and belly to handle risk. You have to choose an industry and you have to put it to work and make sure that it flourishes on the other end. And I don't know if you noticed, but these guys got 100% return. And in the ancient world, it was common for a master who owned an estate to leave normally for just a couple of months at a time. This parable says he went for a long time. And a really long time in the ancient world would be like 2 years. Right? So however long it happens to be, whether it's a few months or whether it's 2 years, if I could get 100% every 2 years, ask any banker around, that's a good deal. So these guys are diligent and they work hard to be able to return this kind of profit. They're good and faithful. They have good and faithful hearts, right? Because that's what the master says to them when they come back and report. He says, well done, good and faithful servant. To be good means that their heart has been aligned with the master's heart. And to be faithful means that they've actually carried it to completion. They've done what the master would do. So do those 3 things mark us as people? Right? Do we have that eagerness, that faithfulness, that diligent desire to work the way these guys work, not for our kingdom, but for the master's kingdom, to extend the master's name and the master's renown and the master's plans? Then we come to the third servant. He has a different heart, very different heart. First guys were about the master's work. They saw their master as a generous guy. And they were thankful for the gifts that they'd been entrusted. And they wanted to show him, look at what else I can do for you, master. This guy has a very different take on his master, though. Notice what he says, verse 24. Master, I knew you to be a hard man. That's how he starts off. That's what's in his heart as he looks at his master. I knew you to be a hard man. Reaping where you don't sow, gathering where you scattered no seed, right? You're just a shrewd miser. You're difficult. This third guy, he doesn't see his master as generous and wise and good. He sees him as hard and demanding and ruthless. Here's a servant that, if he really understood his master's heart, and if he really believed what he was saying, he would have acted differently, right? If you believe that the person you work for is miserly and hard and ruthless, wouldn't you work all the harder knowing that if that's the kind of person he is, there's punishment on the other side for being a slacker? So this guy's a liar too. Out of self-preservation, he's not willing to risk anything for the master. It's all about him trying to stay safe. I knew you were hard. I didn't want to lose something because I didn't want your wrath to come upon me. And yet at the same point, he gets the wrath to come upon him. He's fearful of punishment. So I was afraid, he says. I was afraid. My heart, it had fear for you. And so I went and I hid your talent in the ground. His safety first policy ends up essentially saying, my desire trumps your desire, master. My safety is more important than your kingdom growing. I mean, imagine with me just for a moment, just imagine if this third servant had the idea in his heart of the way the master really was. If he believed that the master was good and generous and wise and trusting and a rewarding master, just imagine how the parable might have played out different. If instead of going and burying it in the ground, if instead he had gone out and he had spent it and he had lost it all. If every bit of the investment had been lost, but he believed in his heart that the master really was wise and generous and good. How different would it have been when he stood before the master, do you think? Do you think it might have been that he stood before the master and he said, Master, I went out and I knew that you wanted me to try and you wanted me to risk and you wanted me to invest and I tried and this is what I did and I did and I did and it all came naught. If the master really was good and generous and wise, the master would have looked at him and said, good try. Let me put you with the guy that has the 10, and maybe he can teach you some things. And then you'll become more fruitful for me the next time around. I mean, a very different parable, right? But because of his heart, right, he wasn't even willing to risk. He wasn't willing to take the step and lose it all because he had fear. He's a wicked, he's a disrespectful servant. Here's your money back, he says. Here's what you wanted. Here's your money back. And so he refuses to acknowledge his own responsibility in failing to do what the master told him to do. He's insulted his master by not being about the master's work. And the master calls him a wicked and slothful servant. He hid the item of value that was entrusted to him to extend the master's renown, he put it under a bushel, and nobody saw it. Now, we may think, well, it's kind of an odd thing, right, to take your money and go hide it in the ground. Well, it was a very common thing back in the ancient Near East because bankers were actually really risky people to put your money in with. And so if you wanted to keep your money, you dug a hole in the ground and you put it in there so that you could make sure the capital stayed. It was a risk to even go to the banker. But because he wouldn't even take that simple risk, which wouldn't have cost him anything, give it to somebody else and let them try and do something with it. He's called lazy and slothful. Different heart, different view of the master. Different results that come out on the other end. Totally different. So let me ask you, when it comes to stewardship, which one of these people are you more like? Are you more like the third servant who's fearful and afraid and doesn't want to make sure that you get out there and that the risk might be too much because maybe you'll look foolish. Maybe it won't be successful. Maybe nothing will come, and so you're afraid to do that because you're more concerned about preserving yourself. Or are you more like the first two guys who are so eager to run in and rush in that they risked it all because 100% return in any short of time is a risk that is huge. They could have lost every bit of it. Are you willing to use all that's been entrusted to you? Are you willing to lose a little bit of your time for a big return for the kingdom? Are you willing to lose your money for a big return for the kingdom? See, risk is at the heart of discipleship. It's at the heart of stewardship. Because every time you take a bit of your time or a bit of your money or a bit of your stuff, every time you take a bit of anything that God has put within your control and you decide to take it out to be able to serve somebody else, you're risking. You're risking that they might reject it. You're risking that you might look foolish. You're risking that God might look foolish. Because how could God's people be so stupid to think that that would work? Risk is at the heart of stewardship. You have to be willing to risk, at least in the way that the master sees. Right? It's not at the heart of stewardship in our world. In our world, it's all about mitigating risk. You try and limit risk. You try and make sure that the risk is a calculated payback risk that's worth it. But in God's kingdom, it's all about risk. Risking everything for Him and His kingdom and His glory. So if we're going to understand stewardship, we have to understand our own heart first. And we have to understand whether we like to risk or whether we don't. And the master doesn't ask if you like to risk or not. He just says, go risk. Risk it all for my kingdom. But understanding whether you like to or whether you don't will help you to understand where you have to fight the battle first. What's the issue for you? Do you believe that failure to pursue the kingdom of God is going to be met with judgment or with grace? Do you believe that if you risk everything and it fails, that the master is going to say, wow, you good for nothing servant? Or is he going to say, good try? Good try. That was marvelous. Didn't work, but it was marvelous. Do you believe that how you handle all the little things of life, right? Your children, your time, your money, your homes, your possessions, your body, the skills that you have, the mind that you cultivate. Do you believe that every bit of that has a bearing upon the extension of God's kingdom? Above all else, the proverb says, guard your heart, for everything you do flows from it. The way you think about God, the way you think about His kingdom, the way you think about your employment and your engagement with it will affect the risk you take, and it will affect the return for the kingdom. God is able to take you and me and our most harebrained, stupid ideas. And because He is all-powerful, and because He is glorious, He can make 100% return if we're willing to take the risk. So we come to communion. We come with a beautiful picture of what was risked. And it made no sense in the eyes of the world. Absolutely zero sense. I mean, the heart of Jesus on the night He was betrayed was a heart that cried out, Father, take this from me, but not what I want, but you want. It was all about the master's business. It was all about the master's kingdom. And so He cried and He prayed and He sweat. And the next day He died. And in the eyes of the world, the risk and the return was pointless. Just another dumb Jew died on a cross. That's what everybody was saying that stood around and watched and jeered and mocked. Just another dumb Jew. But Jesus had a heart like the heart of His master, like the heart of His father. And it wasn't about him, and it wasn't about people perceiving him anymore. It was about him wanting to extend the kingdom. And he knew that in dying to himself, he was dying for you, and he was dying for me. And so he went to the cross and risked it all, and God brought out a most amazing thing. So when Jesus said on that night he was betrayed, "This is my body that's given for you," he's living out this parable. He's risking every bit of it, and he's waiting to see what the Master will do, what the Father will do. So as you eat and you drink this morning, think about it. Think about what Christ gave. Think about the return that he achieved. And ask yourself, did it look like a winning payback as he was hanging on the cross? Or did the victory come after the risk so that you and I might become part of a kingdom? Let's pray. Heavenly Father, we thank you that Christ did have the heart, your heart. We thank you that he held nothing back from you, but he put every bit of his being into service for the kingdom, all of his holiness, all of his righteousness, all of his life, all of his blood, all of his heart. And it was a broken heart as he hung on the cross and cried, my God, why have you forsaken me? Heavenly Father, thank you that Jesus isn't like us. Thank you that he pursued you and your purposes and your plans with reckless abandon. And so we ask, Father, make us more like him. Give us his heart that we too might pursue you with reckless abandon. And all God's people said,